From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day, despite the fact that we are being told that a little bit later this afternoon, and we'll try to go to it live if we can, the Center for Disease Control is going to be changing the masking policy again. And changing it in areas of hot spots where there's high transmission, now urging people to wear masks when they are indoors for extended periods of time. This is a complicated change of course, and a dramatic change of course, that of course will affect the way that millions of Americans live, depending on where you live. We will bring you the very latest on that while it develops. During the morning and the early afternoon, much of the nation was riveted by the hearings that are going on in Washington, D.C. And they are profoundly disturbing, profoundly moving, and profoundly anger-inducing for many Americans on all sides. Hearings about what? About January 6th of this year. Which, again, it does seem like another era, doesn't it? But it's not. It's just about 6 months ago, a little bit more, 7 months ago. But the idea being that right now they've gone forward with the opening of that committee meeting with two Republicans who volunteered, despite the request of the party leadership in the House, led by Kevin McCarthy, not to participate. Liz Cheney, the representative from Wyoming, and Adam Kinzinger, representative from downstate Illinois, decided to participate in these hearings. And I'm glad they did, because there at least is some Republican voice. I think that part of what we were seeing today with this entire drama, melodrama unfolding, and plus the release of a 104-page Inspector General's report on why it was that the Capitol Police were so unprepared for what happened here. The reason I'm glad that the Republican voices are actually participating, even though that is not at all what Kevin McCarthy wanted. He referred to Kinzinger and Cheney as Pelosi Democrats. Pelosi, meanwhile, was blamed very directly for her role in the tragedy on January 6th. That was actually more than a tragedy. It was a crime. And more than 540 people have been charged so far in the Capitol riot case. But the one thing that it seems to me is a terrible mistake is, regardless of which side you're on, it was a terrible mistake for Nancy Pelosi to discard the two nominees for the committee that Kevin McCarthy, under the terms they had agreed to, had the right to select. Jim Jordan of Ohio and Jim Banks of Indiana. Those two voices on the committee hearing today would have been important. Would they have been perhaps combative and trying to deny or diminish the significance of everything that happened? It probably would have been. But then that would have allowed the American people to make up their mind. And I think, frankly, the American people would reject, and rightfully so, any attempt by anyone. I don't care whether it happens to be Adam Kinzinger or Liz Cheney. It won't. Or in the floor of the Congress, whether it happens to be people like Jim Banks or Jim Jordan. The fact is, those voices could be heard and rejected. I believe that's going to be the fate historically to the conference chair for the Republicans in the House, Elise Stefanik of New York. She, of course, defeated Liz Cheney when it came to occupying that position of responsibility. It's the third ranking person in the Republican caucus, in the Republican conference. And Elise Stefanik was outside the U.S. Capitol just as they were getting started with the hearings this morning. and she made a profoundly controversial statement. This is clip 10.
It is a fact that the U.S. Capitol Police raised concerns, and rather than providing them with the support and resources they needed and they deserved, she prioritized her partisan political optics over their safety. The American people deserve to know the truth that Nancy Pelosi bears responsibility as Speaker of the House for the tragedy that occurred on January 6th. And it was only after Republicans started asking these important questions that she refused to seat them.
Okay, she is suggesting is that Nancy Pelosi refused to seat Jim Jordan and Jim Banks because they were asking questions about her and her involvement. By the way, perfectly legitimate to find out everything about what Nancy Pelosi knew and when she knew it. But I think it's a little bit tough to take out of context the statement by Elise Stefanik, the House GOP conference chair, that Nancy Pelosi bears responsibility as Speaker of the House for the tragedy that occurred on January 6th. There's plenty of responsibility to go around here. And does she, as Speaker of the House, bear part of the responsibility for what came out in this Inspector General's report that came out today that shows that there was a complete lack of preparation and communication, despite the fact that there were warnings of all kinds that had been sent over to the responsible parties. 3 days before the siege, a Capitol Police intelligence assessment warned of violence from supporters of President Donald J. Trump, who believed his false claims that the election had been stolen. Some had even posted a map of the Capitol complex's tunnel system on pro-Trump message boards. Quote, unlike previous post-election protests, the targets of the pro-Trump supporters are not necessarily the counter-protesters as they were previously, but rather Congress itself is their target on the 6th, the threat assessment said. This had been sent to the police officers before the riot. And they read on and said, stop the steal's propensity to attract white supremacists, militia members, and others who actively promote violence may lead to a significantly dangerous situation for law enforcement and the general public alike. This was ignored. And it's a very big problem that they did not answer at the hearings today, but they will be compelled to answer because it's extraordinary. Why was this ignored? Why was there no preparation when you have that kind of serious warning? And could it be that there were members of Congress, both Democratic and Republican, who simply didn't take it seriously? Because it sounds bizarre. It sounds like we're better than that. And we certainly should be. The report says officers were instructed by their leaders not to use their most aggressive tactics or their most aggressive weapons to hold off the mob. The report is scathing. It is by the agency's internal investigator, Michael Bolton, no relation to John Bolton, either the John Bolton who was ambassador to the UN and national security advisor, or the Josh Bolton who was the chief of staff for President George W. Bush. At least 543 defendants have now been charged in connection with the January 6th attack. 6 months after the siege, the FBI said they have yet to identify more than 300 individuals believed to have committed violent acts on the Capitol grounds, including over 200 who assaulted police officers. FBI Director Christopher Wray said late last month, this is far from over. But wouldn't it be a good idea if they did get this settled? And how can it be settled to the advantage of the United States of America? 1-800-955-1776. We will be right back with some highlights and lowlights from the hearings today. Coming up.
Your daily dose of debate. It's The Michael Medved Show.
There are at least three rings in the current Washington circus. One of them, the one that's most immediate and dramatic, was the hearing that was conducted this morning by Benny Thompson, basically Liz Cheney, even though she's not officially representing the Republican minority. Was there basically acting as she would if she were the ranking Republican member. She's not. She's the member who was appointed by Nancy Pelosi. That's going on. There's also wonderment. I mean, I'm just reading some of this 104-page report from the Inspector General, and some of the revelations about what was known in advance, what was told in advance to the authorities, really raises some very serious questions about why they were not better prepared. The Department of Homeland Security warned the Capitol Police on December 21st. So, okay, that's more than 2 weeks before these events, of comments on a pro-Trump website promoting attacks on members of Congress with a map of the tunnel system. That, according to the Inspector General's findings released today. Quote, several comments promote confronting members of Congress and carrying firearms during the protest, a Capitol Police analyst wrote. Among the comments reported to the Capitol Police, and these are all comments by people who were planning to participate in the demonstration for President Trump on January 6th, bring guns, it's now or never. We can't give them a choice. Overwhelming armed numbers is our only chance. On January 5th, the day before the riot, the FBI's Norfolk field office in Virginia, and we spoke about this when it happened, relayed another threat from an anonymous social media thread that warned of a looming war at the Capitol. Quote, be ready to fight. Congress needs to hear glass breaking, doors being kicked in, and blood from their BLN and Pantifa slave soldiers being spilled. Get violent. Stop calling this a march or rally or a protest. Go there ready for war. We get our president or we die. Nothing else will achieve this goal. Well, they got what they wanted, but they did not achieve their goal. And Liz Cheney actually was given the opportunity to be the first one to speak at the hearing today. And here is what she said, introducing the questioning of a number of the police officers who survived, some of them narrowly surviving, some of the violence on January 6th. Here is Congresswoman Liz Cheney, number 14.
We must act with honor and duty and in the interest of our nation. America is great because we preserve our democratic institutions at all costs. Until January 6th, we were proof positive for the world that a nation conceived in liberty could long endure. But now January 6th threatens our most sacred legacy. The question for every one of us who serves in Congress, for every elected official across this great nation, indeed for every American, is this. Will we adhere to the rule of law? Will we respect the rulings of our courts? Will we preserve the peaceful transition of power? Or will we be so blinded by partisanship that we throw away the miracle of America? Do we hate our political adversaries more than we love our country and revere our Constitution? I pray that that is not the case. I pray that we all remember our children are watching. As we carry out this solemn and sacred duty entrusted to us, our children will know who stood for truth, and they will inherit the nation we hand to them, a republic, if we can keep it.
That's Congresswoman Liz Cheney of Wyoming speaking at the opening of the hearings today. One of the most emotional moments at the hearings came from Officer Harry Dunn, who's a black member of the police department, and he spoke about the racial slurs that he received from some of the rioters on January 6th. This is clip one.
More and more insurrectionists were pouring into the area by the speaker's lobby near the rotunda, and some wearing MAGA hats and shirts that said Trump 2020. I told them to just leave the Capitol, and in response, they yelled, "No, man, this is our house. President Trump invited us here. We're here to stop the steal. Joe Biden is not the president. Nobody voted for Joe Biden. I'm a law enforcement officer, and I do my best to keep politics out of my job. But in this circumstance, I responded, well, I voted for Joe Biden. Does my vote not count? Am I nobody?" That prompted a torrent of racial epithets. One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, "You hear that, guys? This voted for Joe Biden." Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, "Boo! No one had ever, ever called me a while wearing the uniform of a Capitol Police officer. In the days following the attempted insurrection, other black officers shared with me their own stories of racial abuse on January 6th. One officer told me he had never, and in his entire 40 years of life, been called a nigger to his face, and that streak ended on January 6th.
It's very difficult to listen to. And by the way, it's been very clear on this show, and I've said it many times, I feel instinctively supportive of police officers, including members of the Capitol Police, like what we just heard from Officer Harry Dunn. And if you believe in backing the blue, if you believe in standing with our law enforcement against all of the abuse they get from the left, and usually they do get it from the left, then for God's sake, you have to stand with them against their efforts to try to protect our political process and our Capitol building and the seat of our democracy from these thugs and creeps and losers who I hope will all be sentenced to serious jail terms and fines where appropriate. But there must be consequences. And it is encouraging that there are now more than 500 who have been charged. There is much more. But one of the real questions here becomes, where does the Republican Party go from here? I do think that Kevin McCarthy is right in trying to minimize talk about this matter, because it cannot help the Republican Party. It cannot help the Republican Party's divisions, because there is still someone who was very much involved in these events on January 6th, the former president, who is playing a very active role in the party. How is the Republican Party shaking out? There's a interesting piece by Henry Olson, who is a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. And he basically says the Republican Party now is splintered. It's not divided into two factions, it's divided into five. Which way will it go? We'll talk about that with Harry Olson, coming right up on the Michael Medved Show. Medved Show, looking back at the hearings that occurred today with the police officers, and it featured two police officers from the Capitol Police and then additional officers from the Metropolitan District of Columbia Police Force, the regular cops in Washington. With those four officers testifying, it's very easy to imagine why actually Kevin McCarthy may be grateful that Nancy Pelosi did not accept Jim Banks and Jim Jordan on the panel, because they're both feisty, they're both aggressive, particularly Jim Jordan, and part of what I think a number of people have pointed out about this is that going into the elections coming up, the Democrats have a police problem. They have a real police problem because there are too many crazy Democrats, people like the Squad and people like Bernie Sanders and people of that nature who are very prominent, very powerful in the Democratic Party, who have been anti-police, have called for undermining police and defunding police. And it's very fine for President Biden to say, I've never been in favor of defunding police. Yeah, but there are so many members of your party who are in favor of cutting back their resources, which the police themselves will tell you profoundly undermines them. And if Jim Jordan had been at that hearing today and he had started arguing aggressively with some of the police officers, some of whom were very seriously hurt, one of whom, and testified about it, was knocked unconscious for more than 4 minutes. And basically, there are 140 police personnel who were injured and had to seek medical attention after this riot. And there was some new footage shown today that was horrible. So what this does is it gives Democrats a chance to look like they're very supportive of the police. But the question is, okay, it should be easy for everybody to be supportive of the Capitol Police and to be supportive of the police in D.C. when they're a bunch of knucklehead thugs who are trying to destroy our Capitol building and to interfere with our normal political and constitutional processes. That's easy. And the Democrats get what you might call cheap grace out of that by talking about how much they are sympathetic to the suffering that these police officers went through, to the hardship they went through on that day, to just the difficulty of family members watching this and seeing some of the injuries and eyes gouged and hands broken. Thank God there was no direct murder, and there will probably be no murder charges, because the people who died were among the police officers were people who died in reaction to that day's events, one could argue, with strokes and heart attacks and things of that nature. But the one thing that I would suspect that Kevin McCarthy ought to be grateful for is that Nancy Pelosi did him a favor by not setting up the chance for a very strong Republican partisan like Jim Jordan to embarrass himself by taking on some of these very sympathetic police officers. I'm very pleased to have Henry Olson on the show. He wrote a piece called "The GOP Has Five Factions Now." If we can cut to the chase, because you go to some detail describing each of the five factions, which one would you think is most likely to be dominant going into the election of 2022?
Well, I think it is something. The five factions range from the old guard, which basically doesn't want to make any policy changes, to the prophets, who want to make wide-ranging policy changes. I think that a successful dominant one would be the reformers. They're people who would adapt Trump's policies and reform GOP economic orthodoxy. But it could be the dominant one is what I call the adapters, which have very few changes. And I think that would be sad, because that would be a losing coalition for the GOP.
Okay, what's fascinating about your piece is you talk about all this in terms of policy, but you don't speak a lot about what for many Republicans seems to be the most explosive and divisive issue, which is, are you going to support President Trump? Are these factions identified at all with differences on that issue, or are you assuming that virtually all Republicans are going to want to back Trump in 2024?
Backing Trump personally is different from backing his policies. There is 10 to 15% of Republicans that don't want to back either. They're the people who are generally in the old guard. But they don't really have an influence in the primaries because they're so small. The dominant faction, according to polling from Echelon Insights, is the group of people who like Trump's policies but want to move on from Trump personally. That's where the center of the GOP is right now, and I think that's where a lot of these people are trying to position themselves, how to find policies that will appeal to Trump's voters without being Trump himself.
And that was part of what Mike Pompeo seemed to be doing last night, speaking at the Reagan Library, where I spoke last week. Mike Pompeo would classify as one of those reformers, you call it, or adapters?
I think he is an adapter. The difference between them is that reformers want to have significant changes to orthodoxy, meaning that they want more government intervention in the economy, either for national security reasons or for to spread the wealth around more. Adapters are people who want to make minimum changes, like being harder on the border and being tougher on China than the GOP was before Trump, but otherwise want to make no changes at all. And that's basically where I think Pompeo, Nikki Haley, and Mike Pence are.
Okay, what happened to the GOP as the party of business? Right now, all of these various factions seem to be emphasizing the GOP as America's working class party. What about the party of small business, the aspiring businessman, the coalition of the ascendant? What happened to that?
I think what happened to that was it wasn't a winning coalition. You know, that Mitt Romney talked about entrepreneurship and business, and despite running against a rather unpopular president, lost pretty decisively, both in the Electoral College and in the popular vote. And what Donald Trump showed is that you can get many more voters by appealing to the worker rather than appealing to their boss. It's not that the Republican Party isn't friendly, but what they want for those who want to adapt, want to be want to be more explicitly for the worker. And I think if you went back to a policy that focused on helping the worker mainly by helping their boss, you would go back to a Romney-era coalition, which is a losing one.
What about, there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend about where does business go? If the Republican Party isn't the party of business anymore, certainly the Democrats aren't, what happens to the business interest, the entrepreneurial class in this country?
Well, I think there's a difference between the large established business class and the entrepreneurial class. The entrepreneurial class will still largely find the Republican Party friendly. They will want to keep low taxes on capital and low regulations. There's really no group in the party that wants to change that. But large established business is going to have to make a choice. If they don't like to be in a party with Republicans who have the concerns about religion and culture that most Republicans have, then they have to accept they're in a party that wants to tax and regulate them more. And if they want to be in the other party, then they'll get not as good of a deal as they would have gotten 10 years ago. But there's nobody in the Republican Party that wants to increase the corporate tax rate from 21 to 28% the way Joe Biden does, or increase capital gains tax. That's not where the reformers are.
No, or increase the taxes even more, as so many Democrats do. Henry Olson's piece, The GOP Has Five Factions Now, They All See a Different Future, is posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com. We'll be right back with more on breaking news. And on the Michael Medved show, we are going to be hearing a lot more about some of the painful memories that people have, including members of Congress, including members of law enforcement in particular, from the riots of January 6th. And by the way, if there's anyone out there of any political perspective at all who thinks that what happened on January 6th of 2021 of this year, you think that was a good thing? Now, that was a good idea. That really helped clarify our politics. It was just a bloody disaster and a disgrace in every level. And anyone who tries to deny that, or to say, as a Representative Clyde of Georgia said, well, this was just like a group of tourists coming in to want to see the Capitol. But no, it wasn't. And some of the footage, some of the body camera that they showed today, including the body camera of Officer Fanone, who lost consciousness and almost died. I mean, he was, and people were very worried about him because they were trying to bring him back when he was unconscious and saying, Mike, stay with me, stay with me. You can hear that on the tape. But this is what he said in terms of his reaction after his recovery, and this is from the hearing this morning. This is clip number 7.
The indifference shown to my colleagues is disgraceful. My law enforcement career prepared me to cope with some of the aspects of this experience. Being an officer, you know your life is at risk whenever you walk out the door, even if you don't expect otherwise law-abiding citizens to take up arms against you. But nothing, truly nothing, has prepared me to address those elected members of our government who continue to deny the events of that day, and in doing so, betray their oath of office.
Pretty forceful, you think? One of his colleagues, Sergeant Aquilino Gonnell, spoke about what it felt like being on his side of the thin blue line. And remember, we support police officers and law enforcement, and must, because it's the right thing to do, and it's certainly the conservative thing to do. Here's clip 11, what Sergeant Aquilino Gonnell had to say.
What we were suggested that day was like something from a medieval battle. We fought hand to hand, inch by inch, to prevent an invasion of the Capitol by a violent mob intent on subverting our democratic process. My fellow officers and I were committed to not letting any rioters breach the Capitol. It was a prolonged and desperate struggle. The rioters attempted to breach the Capitol were shouting, Trump, send us. Pick the right side. We want Trump. I vividly heard officers screaming in agony and pain just an arm length from me. I didn't know at that time, but that was Officer Hodges. He's here today to testify. I, too, was being crushed by the rioters. I could feel myself losing oxygen and recall thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to die, defending this entrance.
He fortunately did not die. There's a point that was made by Adam Kinzinger, one of the two Republicans taking part in these hearings. And I think it goes to what a lot of conservatives feel, which is, okay, why is this different from the BLM riots that took place all across the country and destroyed so much property and threatened police officers? We actually, before we go to Congressman Kinzinger, we'll go to Dave in Bellingham, who wants to make, I think, a similar point. Dave, you're on the Medved Show.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. You know, for the last 25 years, you've helped me rationalize some of the thoughts of being a conservative, a Christian, and that kind of thing. And, you know, just like you started talking about, we've got, you know, Portland, Seattle, Minneapolis, and then, you know, what happened on January 6th. But what I was kind of wondering, Michael, what are your thoughts? It was kind of toward maybe 4 years from now, 8 years from now. What would have happened if Trump had been elected? I know I had the opportunity to talk to some folks in Egypt 10 years ago for the Arab uprising, where they were just normal folks like I, but they had to get together, and the government allowed them to buy long guns, and they patrolled the streets in their neighborhood. And when the marauding throngs came up over the hill from down below, and started coming up their street, they shot their guns in the air. And I was talking to these guys at a professional conference shortly after this had transpired, and it really opened my eyes. And so when, you know, Biden got elected, you know, one of the comments I made to people, and I hesitate to do this in a national forum, but I was glad that Biden got elected from the simple fact of it meant that I didn't have to start shooting my neighbors. Anyways, thanks, Michael.
Dave, I appreciate your call. Are you comparing the United States to Egypt?
Michael, I'm comparing, you're a history buff. I'm just reading your God and America thing right now. I've read a lot of your other books.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm grateful. Go ahead.
And It's just that there's unrest. And, you know, I just got done with Ron Chernow's Grant biography, which I believe I got on based on your recommendation.
Right. It's a great book. And President Grant was a great guy. But, see, when you talk about unrest, what President Grant was dealing with, General Grant when he was general, was a very organized army. It was a rebellion. It was formed a different nation. We're very, very far away from that, aren't we? I mean, the idea that basically you have to take people in a neighborhood to pick up arms and fire them in the air to protect against what exactly? We do have law enforcement who is heroic and by and large effective when they're allowed to be. I think what happened, you mentioned what happened in Seattle and what happened in Portland, is just terrible leadership that undermined police officers in trying to do their job. I really very much appreciate your call and appreciate your perspective. Let me go to Adam Kinzinger talking about that difference between the BLM riots across the country, and they were BLM riots that were caused with looting and destruction. Talking about the difference between that and January 6th, this is clip two.
Some have concocted a counter-narrative to discredit this process on the grounds that we didn't launch a similar investigation into the urban riots and looting last summer. Mr. Chairman, I was called on to serve during the summer riots as an Air National Guardsman. I condemn those riots and the destruction of property that resulted, but not once did I ever feel that the future of self-governance was threatened like I did on January 6th. There is a difference between breaking the law and rejecting the rule of law, between a crime, even grave crimes, and a coup.
And what he was talking about, the difference between a crime and a coup, is he's talking about, and I'm sure this will come out, is that some of the leaders of these events that unfolded on January 6th had talked about President Trump imposing the Insurrection Act, and they were coming forward very deliberately to stop a constitutional process, to use violence and threats of violence to interfere with the national election. We've never had that. We've never had that in our country. Closest we ever came was 1876, where there was a genuinely disputed election that was incredibly close. It was decided ultimately by one electoral vote. And in that election, there were people who were talking about launching a second civil war. It was just 11 years after the first civil war had ended. So to go back to 1876... to a threat to use violence to undo an election you don't like. This is one of the things that I do think that America has learned from this process. And it's one of the reasons that I think it's a good thing that most people, and maybe not the former president entirely, but most of his supporters and most people who are very sympathetic to him, most people even who believe that he actually won the election, do not believe it's going to be overturned, do not believe it should be overturned, and just wishes that we would move on to other issues, as Henry Olson was talking about, and other parts of the Trump agenda that are far more worthy of support than that. We will see where it goes. We will also see, do we have a problem with too many elections? There's actually a professor who says the one reform we need most is to drop this two-year congressional term. It should be longer. Really? We'll get to that debate and more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.